You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What up, world? Welcome on all to another episode of The Ocho, presented to you in partnership with SB Nation's bloggingtheboys.com. My name, RJ Ocho. You know me, of course, from BTB and from right here as your humble host on The Ocho. It is a hump day edition of L8. Happy Wednesday, May 15th, 2019. Halfway through the week, so hopefully yours is going well, and hopefully the rest is going to be fantastic, because you deserve it, obviously. There's a lot going on in the world of the Dallas Cowboys, and there's a lot going on here. We have a very special guest coming up soon, Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon in the Locked On Patriots podcast. Mark is a great friend of mine, one of the brightest quarterback minds that you will find. So, of course, we had to have Mark on these days when people are debating Dak Prescott ad nauseum. But a few things before we get to Mark. Taco Charlton took to Twitter on Tuesday evening and posted a photo of himself in a walking boot and seemingly what looked like some hospital wristbands on his wrist. And he tweeted about it and said this was another minor setback. If you don't remember, Taco had shoulder surgery earlier in the offseason, and so obviously this kind of had people's ears perked up, and it was shortly reported after Taco's tweet. He did also share it on Instagram, if you care about the social media platform. But shortly after, it was reported that Taco had his ankle scoped, so hopefully Taco is all right. That's really all you can say about this. I know that Taco has been a disappointing draft pick, and there are a lot of people who wish that that was not the case, but I mean, ultimately, we're all rooting for good health for him and a successful season. This is definitely an interesting year to have potentially some sort of setback, to put it as Taco did, with the Cowboys. I mean, we've talked about this many times, but at defensive end, they have DeMarcus Lawrence and Tyrone Crawford, who we'll get into in a second, and Robert Quinn and, you know, Dorrance Armstrong and Randy Gregory, if he's able to play. And they drafted two defensive ends. And, you know, there's a lot of competition there. That's the fact of it all. And look, it's only mid-May, and that should be noted. But it does seem, you know, like not the best thing. But again, hopefully all is well with Taco. On the subject of Tyrone Crawford, his Florida bar incident came back into the light on Tuesday as well. It doesn't seem like to be or like it is the most serious legal thing. However, we have learned, certainly, you know, if you follow the Dallas Cowboys, that whatever happens in the eyes of the law is not necessarily what is going to impact that player's on-field eligibility. So the NFL could suspend Tyrone Crawford for his incident in Florida. That remains to be seen whether that will or will not happen. So lots of things going on with Cowboys defensive end. Speaking of Florida, I will be in Florida all next week, going to Delray Beach with the wife, honeymoon time. So going to do what we can to get some pods ready for that. But it will obviously be a different sort of week, but we'll be back to normal following that. So, that about does it. Let's stop blabbering. Let's get to Mark Schofield. I promise you, this is a conversation I think you're really going to enjoy. Mark is one of the best guys on Twitter. He's one of the best guys just from a personality standpoint, and one of the smartest, one of the brightest, one of the kindest. So, without further ado, let's get to him. Mark Schofield joins us next on The Ocho. Joining us now is a great and older friend of mine. Older as in we've been friends for a long time. He is very, very young as far as trips around the sun. You can see him everywhere. He's all over the internet, basically all around the sun. Great friend of mine, Mark Schofield from Inside the Pylon and a thousand other places. Mark, it's been too long, amigo.
My friend, RJ, it's fantastic to be with you. And I got to say, you make the trips around the sun reference. I mean, that's a total reference there, my friend. I mean, wow. 40 trips around the sun. That is their like commemorative album. And that was the recent tour they went on, which I did go see. So I got to say, the total lead-in reference there, it's a job well done from you, buddy.
So it was an accident, if I'm being honest. But so I'm not going to get into this yet, but I tweeted earlier in the week, going to have Mark on, let's party, whatever. And one of the questions I got for you was how you feel about Weezer covering Africa, amazingly.
What's interesting is, A, it's a pretty good cover. I do like it. I like the sort of Weird Al aspect to it as well, because, you know, he was in the video for it. And what's interesting is, since that Weezer cover has made it sort of into mainstream music right now, and it's on, you know, top 100, top 50 type stations, my kids love it. Now, my kids like the original Africa version by Toto, but they like the cover too. As a matter of fact, my son, I think, prefers the Weezer cover. It's a good song. I like it, and I like that it got Toto and Africa sort of back into the national conversation, sort of open them up to the younger generation, to the kids, as it were.
You're just here, you know, to preach the gospel of Africa is basically.
Well, I am.
That's your job. I mean, you evaluate quarterbacks and preach the gospel of Africa. And if you don't follow Mark on Twitter, at Mark Schofield, he's good for 6 scrub references a day. Easy, right? That's
at least. I mean, you know, what they say about, you know, establishing an online media personality is to find your brand and build it. And mine is quarterback takes of somewhat, you know, repute, Toto and scrubs. And I've turned that into something of a second career, which I guess is it bad that it beats working for a living?
You know, that's an interesting Venn diagram that you live in, Mark. You mentioned your second career, you were a lawyer. Your story is very inspiring and very well told. I believe you were on, was it the Backyard Banter podcast, Matt Harmon's thing where you went through that? So, I mean, your story is really great and really inspiring. I know a lot of people have sort of tried to take a page out of your book. So I want you to be a lawyer today, Mark, because you're one of those rare people that you have a hand in all of the Twitter cookie jars. You're part of Patriots Twitter, host of the Locked On Patriots podcast, of course. You're part of Giants Twitter, and you surely see how sort of disorganized Cowboys Twitter can be from time to time. And in your own personal perception, what is the strongest sort of debated subject when it comes to that?
When it comes to Cowboys Twitter?
That's right.
I mean, I think it's clearly the Dak Prescott question. And obviously, look, we're getting to the point where the Cowboys are going to have to make a decision about giving him a long-term extension and what they're going to pay him. And, you know, that opens up sort of the, is he worth, say, the $30 million that has been discussed with him? Is he worth an extension? Is he good enough for something like that? How good is he? Where are his strengths? What are his weaknesses? And what's fascinating about this discussion generally is we saw it a little bit last year, say, with Blake Bortles and the Jacksonville Jaguars. I remember going on a couple of different radio shows and saying, you know, this might be sort of the canary in the coal mine in terms of will we see an organization move on from a quarterback on his rookie deal and just go get another rookie quarterback rather than paying a guy that's kind of average. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, Bortles had been extended a little bit and they had, you know, picked up his option. So it wasn't quite a one-to-one comparison. But now we're seeing it a little bit, you know, people are discussing that about Jared Goff and Sean McVay. If Sean McVay is a believer in his system, will the Rams be that team that breaks with Jared Goff? And rather than overpaying him, you know, just get another rookie in to run that sort of system. And so it is an interesting time period in the NFL. We have the new CBA that's going to have to get done, you know, because we're coming to the end of this CBA. We all still believe that a rookie quarterback on his rookie deal is the biggest sort of competitive advantage you can get. And so we do wonder if one of these teams is going to go down that road to sort of say, look, we would rather build around a rookie quarterback again than just overpay for this guy. All that being said, when it comes to Dak, and I know this is what we're going to get into, I think Dak is in that bucket of quarterbacks that if you have him, it's much more likely that he will be better than anything else you will find via draft or on the open market. So Dallas is in that situation where they need to pay him. And it's just a matter of what can they pay him? What can they do from a contract standpoint that will still enable them the flexibility to build around him? That's sort of the ultimate question.
It's a really interesting dichotomy of sorts, because you mentioned there is the, you know, and I think that that's everyone's fear, is I don't want to just keep Dak because there's nothing better. You know, I don't want to settle into this this marriage because I don't think I can ever find a partner again or whatever. I've held off personally from equating this situation to Blake Bortles and the Jacksonville Jaguars, but it does kind of have that vibe. So you kind of brought my worst nightmare to life. Thanks a lot, Mark.
go
ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of that situation. I mean, I think, in terms of purely the ability to play the quarterback position, I think Dak Prescott is far beyond where Blake Bortles was and is as a quarterback. I think he brings a lot more to the table. I think he's much closer to becoming the complete, well-rounded quarterback. The areas that he needs to improve upon, we are seeing development in those areas. And I think Amari Cooper, strangely enough, interestingly enough, was a huge part of that. I think Dak down the stretch was a much better quarterback than Dak at the beginning of the season last year. And so I think that, you know, I put the Bortles thing out there more in the sense of the situation, not sort of a one-to-one comparison. But I understand, look, anytime you bring up Blake Bortles, when you're talking to a fan of a team and talking about their quarterback, and you mention Blake Bortles, their face turns an eerie shade of green usually, because nobody wants to see their quarterback discussed in the same sentence as Blake Bortles, unless it's Blake Bortles lost again, this time to player X, you know? Right.
No, it turns the shade of the old Jaguars helmets, like the mustard part.
Yeah.
So I'm with
you. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it feels like that just because, you know, he's on a team with theoretically a great runner, although Leonard Fournette has certainly not lived up to those standards, and a great defense. And so he's kind of the bus driver there. I get it. So then let's put your old hat on, Mark. Defend Dak. What are his strengths then? Because people act like he's worthless, like he's got nothing going on. They only want to criticize. They want to compare him to Tony Romo, and not just Tony Romo, but 2014 Tony Romo, which was him at his peak. What are Dak's strengths? What are his reasons from an athletic, from a talent perspective that are worthy of paying for?
I think when you look at Dak Prescott, you study him on film, you see competitive toughness, you see leadership, you see athletic ability, and you see at times the growth and development as a pocket passer in terms of anticipation, in terms of making reads, in terms of ball placement. And to be fair, when I studied these guys coming out, Dak Prescott, I think, was my QB 17 in that class. Like, I think I even had it behind Hackenberg. I was not a fan. I sort of struggled with him, particularly from a ball placement perspective. I thought that when you look at playing the quarterback position, there are some things that are almost non-negotiable in a sense. And accuracy and ball placement is one of those. I mean, you often don't see quarterbacks improve themselves in that area when they move from the college ranks to the NFL game. But what I sort of missed on Dak, and I actually wrote a piece over it inside the Pylon. I do this every 2 years, like looking back at my quarterback rankings from, you know, 2 years prior, was the competitive toughness angle. I mean, I had it in my notes. I just didn't weigh it properly. I didn't value it enough. And you have that with Dak. It enabled him to take some steps improving his accuracy and ball placement from his, you know, final year at Mississippi State to his time as a rookie with the Cowboys. You know, it allows him to make some plays now using his athleticism that a lot of quarterbacks don't make, whether it's toughness in the pocket, and you see that his quarterback rating is actually better when pressured than it is when he's kept clean, which is an interesting thing, because most quarterbacks, when they get pressured, you see them struggle a little bit more. But with Dak, it's almost the reverse. It is the reverse, which speaks to that competitive toughness. It speaks to his ability to handle pressure situations in the pocket, which is something you're going to face as a quarterback. And the other thing I think that you see growth from him, and he's trended in the right direction in a number of areas, such as anticipation and processing speed, that are so critical to play the position. And those will always be a work in progress for younger quarterbacks, especially those that, you know, came from the system that he did, where it's a lot of RPO, option type stuff, spread type stuff. you know, now running the more NFL pro style offense, there's going to be a slow growth in that area. And anticipation throws were an area where, you know, Dak was lacking. You look at the start of last year, missed a lot of opportunities because he couldn't make anticipation throws. That got better as the year went on. It seemed like he was making more of those. You know, I just, before we did this, I sat down and went over my notes and actually looked at a couple of his games from last year. And you see him, it was week 13 against New Orleans, that game that they won that was a huge win for them. Mm-hmm. And you saw him making some anticipation throws and handling pressure and getting the ball out on time and in rhythm. And it's a much different Dak than we saw earlier in the season, say against Tennessee or Detroit early, or even Carolina very early. And so you put that together, you have a quarterback that brings some strengths to the table in terms of athleticism and competitive toughness, as well as demonstrated growth in areas where quarterbacks need to excel at to be successful. I think, you know, if I were to stand up and say, argue the case for a Dak Prescott extension and making him sort of the focus of your offense, those are the areas I'd begin.
That makes a lot of sense. And there's a lot certainly to believe in that Dak as an ascending player in specific categories and specific things, but you touched on leadership and competitive nature. And those feel like two things that people are so easy and quick to dismiss. Obviously, you know, they're not as measurable as arm strength or obvious, you know, things that are a little bit more objective, but are those really something that matter? And B, if so, because I assume they are, to what degree? And is that even, I know I just said it wasn't measurable, but is it measurable in the sense that maybe that truly is the, you know, the NAS for Dak's Fast and Furious car that elevates him in a way it doesn't elevate somebody else as much?
I like the Fast and Furious reference there. And, you know, to the one major part of that question, does competitive toughness matter? Yes. I mean, I will tell you, as somebody that has gone through the Scouting Academy, a program taught and created by Dan Hatman, a former NFL scout with a couple of different organizations who learned from people like Dave Gettleman and others about how the NFL scouts and evaluates players. Every player at every position gets graded on a number of different traits. Some are just general that are attributable, and some of the all positions are graded upon, and then you have some position-specific traits. Were for quarterbacks, it might be accuracy and processes. Be for wide receivers, it'll be, you know, route running and things like that. But every player is graded in terms of their competitive toughness. And you look for things like, you know, playing through losses, you know, playing against tougher, you know, higher level competition, you know, playing in conditions and things like that. And so it is something that the NFL does look for. And I know it's sort of the touchy-feely catch-all thing, like when you can't point to something, you can say, well, the guy's a leader and he's competitively tough. But quarterback's a different beast. You know, you look at evaluating other positions like wide receiver, like running back, it's a snap-to-whistle proposition, right? How does the guy execute during the course of a play? Quarterback's entirely different because there's a leadership component too. Because when you get into a huddle, you don't have 10 sets of eyes staring at the center. You don't have 10 sets of eyes staring at the right guard. They're looking at the quarterback. They're looking for that person to lead them. They're looking, you know, when there's adversity, when it's third and long, like who's going to step up and make the play? And people look to the quarterback first. And if people still doubt that leadership matters, that the aura around a quarterback matters, I would turn your attention to the Thursday night game last year, Jets-Browns. Mm. And that Browns team looked dead in the water. Tyrod Taylor was doing nothing for them. And the second Baker Mayfield took to the huddle, it was like a light switch was flipped. That huddle was different. That stadium was different. You could see it just watching it on TV. And I'll tell you, RJ, my parents are huge football fans. They were over my house that next day to take my daughter out for ice cream or something. And they came in and they were like, it was like a completely different team. I mean, they saw it. Anybody watching that game could tell that when Baker Mayfield walked into that huddle, they were a different team. And I would tell you, from the Senior Bowl, you know, 2 years ago when Baker was there, it was like that at the practices. Like, you knew at Ladd Peebles Stadium when Baker was, you know, on the field, because it was just different. And some players have that sort of leadership, that magnetism. And Dak Prescott might, in a similar vein, be that kind of guy that can sort of inspire. And the other thing I'll say about sort of competitive toughness, you know, after I missed on Dak, the next year, one of the guys that I was really high on was Deshaun Watson. And part of the reason that I was high on him was his competitive toughness and, you know, his ability to sort of put his body on the line. You think about his national championship game against Alabama. Mm-hmm. He gets helicoptered by Reuben Foster. but he pops right back up, you know, takes his shot from the best defender Alabama has and gets right up. You want to go play for that guy. If you're a Hunter Renfrow, if you're a Mike Williams, you see that, you want to go make a play for Deshaun because he's putting his body on the line for you. Well, what did we see from Dak in the playoffs? You know, putting his body on the line on sort of that QB draw. You know, that's a play that sticks in my mind. If you want to go make plays for a guy like that. And so, yeah, I would say the competitive toughness does matter. And Dak has shown from his time, even at Mississippi State to now, that he brings that competitive toughness and that leadership quality to the table that is critical at the quarterback position.
I anticipated that this would come up during our conversation, so I went back and rewatched. I'm sure you've seen it. If not, you've seen many things like it. When Dak got drafted, Mississippi State put together this video that was just a bunch of fans, you know, thanking him, yep. You know, et cetera. And it really did kind of just speak to his character. I mean, you know, Dak took Mississippi State to number one in the country at one point in time. I mean, you know, they don't hand out trophies for, you know, being the number one rated team, but still, I mean, to take the Bulldogs to that level is certainly something that was very, very special at the time. So I get that. And I think that is something that's lost on people because they do focus too much on the negatives. What are the flaws in his game? I mean, if you had to now argue against paying him, because there are, right. You know, there's no short order of people in that camp. If you had to say, you know what, we're good, why would you feel that way?
You know, I think when you look at areas where he still struggles, and ball placement remains sort of a thorn in his side. There are times when I think the Cowboys miss opportunities in the passing game because, you know, the pass might still get completed, but it's not put into the right spot. Or he doesn't give his receivers the best options or opportunities for yardage after the catch because the ball placement isn't as good as it could be. And, you know, this is where you sort of have to separate, you know, accuracy from ball placement, because a throw can be accurate but not placed well. A pass can be completed but be poorly placed. And, you know, when one of your jobs as a quarterback is to put your receivers in position to be successful, you know, in terms of just catching the ball to begin with, but then after the catch. And there are times when Dak's ball placement prevents yak opportunities. There's the anticipation question, which, while I said, you know, earlier that it does seem like it is improving, you know, there were a number of opportunities last year, more so earlier in the year, but you still saw him sprinkled in throughout the rest of the time, throughout the rest of the season, where if he had just made an anticipation throw, he would have, you know, moved the chains, hit on a big play downfield, you know, whether it's putting the safeties against the cover two or, you know, a deep out route where he hangs on it too long, has to see it come open, has to see it and throw it, and he, you know, gets broken up or something like that. Or, yeah, it still gets completed, but if he throws it earlier, it's a big play. You know, so those are, you know, some things with him. There's a mechanical issue here. There are times when he, you know, sort of doesn't, you know, he will just rely on arm strength and won't set his feet, or he'll be making a throw with his feet moving and it'll lose some velocity, which has led to some problems. And there's a problem of assumption with him. You look at his interception in what was the second Eagles game, the week, was it 14, 15, I forget. Yeah. But an interception he threw earlier in that game where he had Amari Cooper on a bender route coming from right to left. He was the number three receiver on the trips. You know, they just had the tight end to the left. And it's a cover three look, and he just assumed that corner was going to stay on the tight end. So he tries to throw a touch pass. He just assumes that the corner is going to stay low. Corner peels off and makes an interception and takes away what could have been a touchdown. You know, there are times when you see that from, you know, college quarterbacks. You don't expect to see it, you know, from a guy that's a multiple-year starter. I mean, I remember this draft season doing a piece on Will Greer and the dangers of assumption, because you see it from him, you expect to see it from a college player. You don't expect to see it from an experienced quarterback. But he still does that, and that's something he still needs to clean up. And so, you know, if there are some weaknesses, I think those would be them. Those are the near the top. You've seen improvement, at least in the anticipation, but some of the stuff still is a work in progress. And with the experience he has to date right now, it should be beyond just a work in progress. We should have cleaned these things up. And you have to wonder, if he hasn't cleaned it up by now, will he ever? And if he doesn't, how detrimental to the offense could that be? And you could make a case that it could be very detrimental. And so if I were to sort of switch tables from, you know, plaintiffs to defense or vice versa, that's the case I'd make there.
I agree with you. And that's why this is such a fascinating topic, because there are things to buy on both sides of the fence. For me, you know, there are basic sort of, I don't want to call them fundamental, but basic problems that seem to exist with Dak. I wrote something during the first half of the season before Amari got there and fixed everything. You know, when the Cowboys played the Lions, Dak, you know, walked out of bounds two yards in front of the line of scrimmage. Things like that. Like, dude, just throw that away. You know what I mean? And you know, you could get picky and talk about the loss of 2 yards, but you know, that adds up, and that's a factor for a lot of people. They ultimately won that game, but they did lose in Houston, and they were trying to win that game in regulation, and it did end up going to overtime. But late in the game, Dak went out of bounds right before they had to punt the ball away to Houston. It's just things like that are like, dude, you know, to your point, you can't be a at the time, third-year NFL quarterback and making sort of basic whoopsie-daisies like this.
Right. You know, and those sort of head-scratching type decisions, you know, they do turn up from time to time with him. Now, you know, I mean, that Detroit game, I mean, he did some nice things in that game. You know, he had a couple of good throws, but, you know, a decision like that is, like we said, a head scratcher. And you'd expect to see your third year quarterback, sort of a leader of the team, you know, make better decisions. You know, it's interesting you mentioned Cooper, because I do feel like, you know, you use the phrase he fixed everything. I do feel like he played a huge role in Dak's sort of second half of the season growth. And the ability of a wide receiver that can get separation, I think, is critical for a quarterback like Dak, because some of the weaknesses we've talked about, you know, the failure to anticipate at times and the poor ball placement, well, those are magnified when you're throwing a receiver that can't separate. Mm-hmm. But when you've got a receiver that can separate on a consistent basis, and to the extent that Amari Cooper does, that's huge for a quarterback, because then the throw doesn't have to be as precise. The throw doesn't have to be perfectly timed, because the separation is there. And so I remember writing about that after Cooper came over. I think it was for the score, maybe some other places, that the Cooper trade was just huge for Dallas. And so that sets up an interesting question. You know, if Dak does get this big time deal, you know, Ezekiel Elliott's out there and Cooper's out there, like, that might force a decision, which guy are you going to then look to sign next and make a priority? And I would make the case that I would make the case for Cooper in that case.
Sure. I mean, if Amari elevates your quarterback, whoever your quarterback is, he's more valuable than Ezekiel Elliott, just off of that fact alone. That's kind of the point the Cowboys were in now, amazingly, 4 years ago, when they were they had to choose between DeMarco Murray and Dez Bryant. They chose Dez, and that whole thing fell apart in a different way. My final question to you, Mark, is that the talk is always, well, what would Dak be if he didn't have, you know, this offensive line, he didn't have Zeke, didn't have Amari, et cetera. I think that's a stupid premise to begin with, because when is he going to play a game conceivably with 10 different dudes, you know? Is that a factor? And don't shy away, because I just called it stupid. Is that a factor for you that you know, alters his worth potentially? Or is it just a matter of, hey, these are the dudes on our team, we should evaluate it this way? That's a complicated question.
Yeah, I mean, that is a complicated question. But I think you sort of have to sort of evaluate the quarterbacks, both in a sense in a vacuum, like the traits that they have, the things that they do on their own. But then, of course, balance it with the people around them. I mean, you mentioned the fact that, look, I am a Patriots guy. And so I've obviously heard and addressed the sort of questions with Tom Brady. Is he a system quarterback? What does he do? How successful would he have been away from Bill Belichick or away from the offense that they play in?
Sure.
And I think with Brady, with Prescott, there are still traits that you can point to that would say this guy's abilities as a quarterback and the things that he brings to the table would still make him successful in other environments. And the competitive toughness and the athleticism are ones that Dak would bring to the table in those situations. And so I think that if he was taken away from these guys, he would still be pretty successful, but maybe not as successful, but still, I think, you know, good enough. The interesting thing with Dak, though, is, yeah, he has had the benefit of playing behind, for the most part, a pretty good offensive line. When that sort of was stripped away due to injuries and whatnot, you did see him struggle a little bit more. But I think all quarterbacks would. You know, when you have a great offensive line and suddenly you're pressured all the time, it's going to have an impact. And so at the end of the day, like, I try to evaluate them, you know, partly in a vacuum, partly in the situation they're in. Either way, I think there's still a case to be made for Dak Prescott is going to be worth a long-term deal with Dallas. And it's just a matter of, can they do it in such a way that doesn't completely hamstring them from building around him? And, you know, keeping some of the good talent in place, such as Cooper.
I know I said that was my last question, but I lied. The very last thing, you said that you do think he would be worth it. if you had to put a percentage on it for me, in terms of worth it, be, you know, off of his own accord, and worth it because it's not worth going down the rabbit hole of trying to replace him, a la the Jacksonville Jaguars. They kind of lucked into Nick Foles being available, et cetera. What percent would be what? I mean, you know, how much is it really Dak's own true merit that he's worth $30 million or whatever the market rate may be?
That's interesting. I think it's, you know, maybe 65-35 Dak versus what else could be out there. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for the majority of it is the fact that, look, you know, Dak brings things to the table that matter at the quarterback position. And yes, there are weaknesses and deficiencies, as we've talked about. They do seem to be, at least sort of the anticipation part, trended in the right direction. So you're seeing growth, and maybe it comes together for him this year, you know. But I do think that there's enough that on his merits alone, he's worth it. You know, but that being said, there is a case to be made, you know, minor in this case, like I said, 35% or so, that you look around at the quarterback landscape, and is there anything out there that could definitively be better than Dak Prescott day one? I mean, maybe, you know, maybe next year's draft class, perhaps Tua, perhaps, but I don't even know if I'd go that far right now. I mean, I think as people start to dig in over the next couple of months on Tua, they'll realize that there are some flaws to his game as well. Justin Herbert, maybe, you know, but again, I think the same thing will happen to him. This always happens every draft cycle. These guys get anointed in May, and by October, it's, I don't know about them. You know, they struggle, they have their deficiencies, they don't develop the way we expect them to, and then we sort of move away from them. And maybe 2 years down the road, yeah, Trevor Lawrence looks great right now. I think everybody assumes that 2021, he's QB1, first guy off the board, hands down. That could change, you know, and then you look around, you know, free agency market next year. I mean, yeah, if Drew Brees somehow wiggles free from St. Louis and that deal and how their situation is, you know, underway with him and his contract situation, yeah, maybe Drew Brees would be better than Dak Prescott. But beyond that, I mean, Nate Sudfeld, Ryan Fitzpatrick, like, you know, next year's free agency quarterback market doesn't look that great. And so I think, yeah, there is a part of it that is, there's probably not a surefire thing out there away from Dak. And so, you know, I do think Dak on the merits is worth the extension, but there is an argument to be made that you're not finding anything better, at least a surefire thing that's going to be better than him come day one.
I think that's an interesting percentage, 65-35. Mark Schofield, Inside the Pylon, host of the Locked On Patriots podcast, on Twitter at Mark Schofield. Again, good for all Africa and Scrubs references. Anything else you want to plug, Mark? I've brought out like six surge protectors because I know you have that many things to plug.
I mean, the list is long but distinguished, as they would say. I mean, the easiest way to find me is on Twitter at Mark Schofield. If you want to listen to Locked On Patriots, it's a daily Patriots podcast. It's like 60% Pats, 30% quarterbacks, and then 10% whatever is on my mind that given day. But yeah, I mean, Twitter is just the best way to find me.
Sweet, Mark. Appreciate it. Good friend. Have a great May, and have a great June and July and August and the whole fall and everything. I wish and hope great things for you, my friend.
You too, my friend. Always great to be with you. Thanks for having me on. And it's a blast as always, my buddy.
Well, that was so awesome. And thanks again to Mark. For taking the time to join us. He's a very busy guy, as you're aware. I mean, Mark is everywhere. You've definitely seen Mark's work. And again, on Twitter at Mark Schofield, that's Schofield, S-C-H-O Field. Make sure you follow him. He's fantastic. And I think he makes really interesting cases for and against Dak. Look, there's people who just want to stick to cliches in terms of things they like or things they don't like, but there's a deeper level to all of that. And I do think it's fascinating to consider what measurement you would pay Dak based off of his own merits, which is a fascinating topic to consider because there is a level of fear, and we've seen that. That's why guys like Andy Dalton and Ryan Tannehill have gotten contracts, because their teams were afraid of exploring the great unknown. And so, yeah, that certainly exists for Dak. That exists for a lot of guys. I mean, the only people that doesn't exist for are your Tom Brady's and Aaron Rodgers's and your Super Bowl winners, et cetera. But so a very, very fascinating onion to peel back the layers on. That about does it for Wednesday's episode of The Ocho. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Hopefully you had a fantastic ride. If you get a chance, make sure you subscribe to the Blog of the Boys podcast feed and make sure you give us a rating and a review. That would certainly help us, and it helps make the show better, which helps us do things that make this all run more smoothly. So check out blogoftheboys.com. You can follow me on Twitter at RGOchoa. Follow the BTB account at blogoftheboys. And just like Mark, you have a fantastic May and rest of really your life is what we want here. We'll be back on Thursday with another riveting edition of The Ocho. Have a great Wednesday and a great Thursday between now and then. We will see you mañana, my friends. As always, go Cowboys and peace out.